Hello, welcome to Greenlit with me, the voice which belongs to Toby Earle. Each fortnight on Greenlit, a guest receives the thrilling news their life is to be made into a biopic, and we discuss how that story will be told. Will they star? Which moments won't make it into the adaptation? And will Dracula make an appearance? In this episode, comedian, writer, and, in a good way, viral sensation Rosie Holt will plot the course of this certain blockbuster. Holt is a stand-up, a winner of the So You Think You Can Write Funny competition. Her online videos where she plays the woman have become a highlight of the social media hellscape, and she's a noted snake wrangler. Rosie Holt, welcome to Greenlit.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time out from castigating and analysing the government in the videos, which have, I think, been a highlight for many people over the last sort of 18 months, 2 years. Not that, you know, anyone should immediately think, well, there's not a lot to compare it against. So, like, as a base level.
That's true.
I'm assuming she's in another room at the moment. The woman, she won't be here today.
Yeah, she won't be here. She's in another room listening to talk radio, I think.
Wants to get all the facts.
She's all about the facts. She's not about any, you know, anything that's not true. Only good, logical facts.
Thank you for joining us here on Greenlit. Maybe one day we will cover the biopic of the woman. Maybe that's even, I don't know, or maybe that's something you're even planning for your return to the stage, return to the Edinburgh Festival. It's the life story of the woman, how she came to be such a warm and humane individual. I'm not saying I want any credit for this, but if you are thinking of doing that, maybe an avenue to explore.
Yeah, it could be really inspiring. People go, oh, look at this wonderful person and what she achieved.
Would you be really that happy, though, if people came to that show and we're like, oh my God, she's incredible. She's this great role model. Gosh, I'd love to be like her.
That's always the worry though, isn't it? That people are going to go, oh, she's great. What a wonderful thing to say. Brilliant.
And I have to ask actually about the woman and the response to the woman. And on that tip, do people get in touch thinking she's real? Or anyway, at the start, did they get in touch thinking this person was real and agreed with the things she said?
Actually, no. It did. The only time that happened was I did a sketch that mocks Lawrence Fox, and he tweeted it and was a bit like, oh, well, at least she's trying type thing. And I got a lot of abuse from his followers, but I also got a portion of his followers who just were like, oh, she's great. Love what she's saying. Great, she's sticking up for you, Loza.
I like it. This is the one time positive feedback has led to you questioning your career choice. Well, congratulations, Rosie. Your life has been greenlit for a biopic.
Yes.
But first of all, is it pronounced biopic or biopic?
It's biopic, isn't it?
Is it?
Is it? Oh, no, I don't even know. But isn't biopic, isn't that American? Isn't that like biopic? Don't they say it?
Biopic.
What do they say? Biopic. Biopic.
That's the story of how deodorant was invented.
Oh, yes, okay. Again, a very moving story, which made people inspired and want to do better with their lives. Starring Jennifer Lawrence.
Starring Jennifer Lawrence. Who else? Anyone else in there just while we're casting?
Robert De Niro. Why not? Yes. Oh, they've already done the Silver Lining together. They can reunite. And Rob Schneider.
Does he play the scientist?
Yeah, he does. And people are like, wow, this is a surprisingly sensitive portrayal from Rob Schneider. We didn't know he had it in him.
Does he become incredibly passionate and tearful? And he's in a boardroom and he's sort of slamming his fists and he's talking about how women need roll-on deodorants, not spray deodorants. Like it's incredibly important.
Yeah, 100%. And then what will happen is everyone will praise it, but then there'll be a backlash going, oh, look at this mansplaining.
I don't know if we should bother then, really. Do we? It sounds like we might get quite a lot of hassle. You try and make one film about how deodorant was invented, and this is what happens. And talking about mansplaining, actually, that was a show of yours, wasn't it? Mansplaining feminism.
It was a very silly show, though. So it was me and this male comic called Christian Talbot, and basically we kind of swapped the gender roles in it. So I was really awful and talking over him the whole time. And I mean, I was proud of it. It was a fun show. And also it wasn't really lectury or saying or kind of worthy. It was very, very silly.
Well, I think we worked out it's biopic.
Did we? Or didn't we say biopic? Biopic.
Okay, so it's biopic.
Yes.
And the meeting, Rosie, you're an actor, you're a writer and a comedian. You kind of have meetings similar to this, but this obviously is a huge meeting when you discuss the nature of the film. You're going to meet the studio executives. Where are you going to meet them? Is it in a, you know, is it in a fancy restaurant? Is it in a bar? Is it in a boardroom? Is it in a studio? Where is it?
I think in a fancy restaurant in the evening with wine. Because in a boardroom, it's all a bit nerve-wracking and you're all tense. But if you're a nice thing and then you can talk about the food and you've got some decent wine to lubricate your throat and your ideas, yes, it's happening.
So some of these executives, they might be like the LA types who think a thimble of wine at lunch means you might have an issue. Do you think you'd be drinking solo or do you think the executives would be joining in?
Maybe I'd have, but I could be viewed as the sort of zany, eccentric Brit. And they'd be like, oh, she's just so crazy with her crazy film. And I'm there with my little wine.
If they're all on board, right? If the wine is flowing like beer, is it a long session?
Yeah, it's a long session and it's going really well. Ideas are buzzing. They're really on board. And then at the end, it gets a bit debaucherous and wrong. And someone snogs someone they shouldn't in the loose. And it's all very exciting. But it doesn't compromise the integrity of the film and the making of the film.
Can you name names, Rosie? Who has snogged who? Which fictional studio executives have snogged in the loo? Can you name their names? Who is it?
Barry. No, wait, there's not any. Is there any executives called Barry? Barry.
In this world. Well, Barry Van Dyke on Diagnosis Murder. So there is a Barry in Hollywood.
Barry Van Dyke. Okay, this is Barry Van Dyke, but it's not that Barry Van Dyke. It's a different Barry Van Dyke. They share the same name.
What a difficult childhood for him as well, because everyone would just say, oh, your dad's Dick Van Dyke. And you go, no, I'm not that Barry Van Dyke. It's a different... And actually, my dad was a chimney sweep and it was really hard work.
Oh, that's really... Oh, poor old Barry.
I feel bad for Barry now. Let him have his fun, Rosie.
Let him have his fun. Why not? After his thimble of wine.
Okay, well, that's what you're drinking. That's what's happening. The executives have said yes. Exciting news, Rosie Holt. Your life has been greenlit for a biopic. But how would your life be told by Hollywood or Bollywood or Nollywood? And what sort of creative control would you exercise in bringing the greatest story you know to the big screen? So let's start with the big one, Rosie. What's the film called?
Shit Weasel.
Wow. Shit Weasel.
Shit Weasel.
Okay. Why?
Well, I'd say I didn't come up with this name. This was when I was last in the Edinburgh Festival and I was doing this show called The Crown Jewel with my friend Brendan Murphy, who's a very funny improviser and actor. And he was saying, we should do a show of your life. And he said, because all these embarrassing things keep happening to you and we should call it. And he said, it'll be like Fleabag, but more rubbish. Obviously, Fleabag's great. But he was like, it'd be like a rubbish Fleabag. So we could call it Shit Weasel. So when I was trying to think of a name, I was trying to think of something better, but Shit Weasel just kept going back into my brain. So I'm angry with Brendan for putting this name in my head, but it doesn't mean I'm unable to think of anything else.
Well, it is a punchy name and I love the riff of from Fleabag. But how did you feel when he said Shit Weasel, that's your life, that's the name of the film? How did you feel?
Yeah, initially I was quite pissed off. I was like, what do you mean Shit Weasel? He was like, oh no, it's fun. It's like, oh, what's happened now? It's all gone wrong. But I thought, you know, I could own it. Like Fleabag, she's cool. She's got this gross name. I mean, obviously it's not her real name, but she's kind of a cool lady who makes mistakes, but it's kind of confident and cool. And I thought, yeah, I could do that. I could reclaim Shit Weasel.
Do you honestly think you could live your life with everyone going, hey, Shit Weasel? Shit weasel over there.
Yeah, that might get a bit upsetting, mightn't it?
When Brendan, your great friend,
your great friend
says shit weasel because of all the embarrassing things which keep happening to you, what sort of embarrassing things?
I mean, it's very unfair. It's not like lots of embarrassing things happen to me. I think I'm just I'm very lacking in common sense, which I don't think is an unusual trait in a performer. So right. I can't think of anything specific. I'm just I just lose things all the time, or I get things a bit wrong, or I think everything is just gets a bit overwhelming.
What have you lost? What have you lost that's of kind of importance?
Oh, so much. And then, I mean, also like I get a lot lost. I got scammed in lockdown, which was awful.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you put this on social
media?
I put this on social media
because it was, I felt like everyone should experience my shame. But that kind of thing, it wasn't the biggest shock. I was like, if anyone's going to get scammed, it's going to be me.
Old shit weasel over here.
Old shit weasel.
I mean, that's horrible, though, that you went through that. Because it was quite a long thread that you explained how they did it. And it's quite sophisticated, right?
Yeah, it's really mean. I mean, I don't know how they sleep at night, but they get you when you're in a panic. So they rang up and they knew enough about me. And they said that basically I was getting done for tax fraud. And I do my own taxes. And I thought this is very conceivable that I might have completely screwed up my taxes. And they said, you have a choice here. So you can either pay us a fee up front now, or we'll take you to court. Which one do you want to do? And I was like, what? I got to pay you money. It's fine. Don't do that, kids. Don't trust them. They won't ring you.
Was the person pretending to be Rishi Sunak on the phone?
Yeah, I was like, why wouldn't Rishi call me? Do you know what I mean? Why not? It's just Rishi checking in. I was flattered that he called me himself.
You do realise this is just Rishi checking in is his next slogan. You know, all like he has the signature and it's all like, hey, I'm down. I've got my football shirt on. Hey, guys. Hey, welcome to my podcast. Just Rishi checking in.
Yeah, you're right. It'll be a photo op as well of him sort of like laughing with great lighting.
Did you get the money back? Did you ever get the money back?
So, no. I got half of it back from the bank. And then the bank were like, no, we're not giving you the rest back because you're an idiot. That's basically what they pretty much said that in nicer things. But then I took it to the Ombudsman. That's the one, yeah. And I literally found out yesterday, I think I'm getting the money back. Woohoo! Is that great?
I'm really, really pleased for you.
Thank you.
So old shit weasel tramps in the end.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That could be the can you imagine if that's the denouement of the film, just me getting my money back? Going, yes! End of credits. What a film.
It's quite a good ending. It's not a bad ending at all, like that kind of that little triumph at the end.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest thing, it's not the biggest triumph in the world, but it's a significant personal triumph in the end. You've beaten the system.
Yeah, but it'd be a bit like, have you seen, oh God, that very depressing Jack Nicholson movie directed by Alexander Payne? Everyone was like, oh, it's a really fun, funny comedy. And he's sort of quite old and he gets in a hot tub with Kathy Bates at one point.
I want to say, is it Schmidt something? But yeah.
The thing with that, everyone was like, oh, it's a really fun, great comedy. And I watched it. It's incredibly depressing because it's, spoilers, he's sort of trying to find...
Schmidt.
Yes, about Schmidt. He's trying to find sort of meaning in his life again because his daughter is marrying a guy who's an idiot. And he's thinking, if I can stop this, then I've done something. And then at the end of the film, he's back being depressed again. And then he gets a letter back because he sort of sent a letter to some kid in some third world country as a part of a scheme, giving money, so like a adopted kid. And this kid writes back to him and says, oh, thank you. I've spent money on this and this. It's just a sort of sweet little letter. And he's so moved, he just cries. And that's the end of the movie. And it's supposed to be this, oh, he's just had this little triumph because the rest of his life is so shit. It's all he has.
Are you saying you watched that film and came away feeling more depressed?
Yeah, it was really depressing. But I was like, what? Okay, so, I mean, it's nice that he's giving money to charity, but that's all he's got. there's some little boy being like, thanks for the money, and him being completely overwhelmed that something nice is happening and he's worthy, he's done something in his life that he's proud of.
So what you're saying is that's not how you want Shitweasel to
be. That's not how I want Shitweasel to be.
Okay, well, what we'll do is we'll go from the ending, which obviously haven't quite worked out yet, but that's all to come. And let's go with the opening scene. What's the opening scene to Shitweasel, the Rosie Holt story?
So, you know how in biopics, there you go, biopic, not biopic.
Yes.
They often have them as a child, and then they're like, with Aretha Franklin, they're like, Aretha, stop singing! Or like Johnny Cash, like, Johnny, stop playing that damn guitar! Then the credits roll, and you think, yeah, they weren't appreciated when they were young, but now they're going to be appreciated. So I was trying to think of a sort of something comparable to that. I mean, I had a very happy childhood, so I didn't really have anyone going, hey, you, shut up. But just fast forward a bit, when I was at drama school and I had my sort of end of term report, and the teacher said to me, she said, Rosie, I know you're not, but the problem with you is you always give the impression you're taking the piss. And I thought that could be, it could be that, and then me looking sadly at the camera, and then the credits start, and they're like, yeah, we're going to learn how she wasn't just taking the piss. She was serious. She was a serious minded person, serious thoughts and ideas.
So hang on, this is brilliant. This is by the way, this is a wonderful opening, because it's the drama teacher saying to you, you're taking the piss, and you look at the camera, and then the credits like start.
Yeah.
And it's, what's the song? What's the music? What kind of kicks in? Is it kind of Anarchy in the UK, or there's some kind of something to denote sort of like a bringer of chaos? Or are you hoping to go the other way?
No, I think that's great. I hadn't thought about the music, but I'm liking where you're going. And you can be a advisor on the film, thank you.
Can you share why you were why your teacher thought you were taking the piss, even though they knew that you weren't?
Well, I think I got that a lot. Like, another thing I used to get was because the thing they do, like, I had a great time at drama school, but one of the things they do, which is a bit suspect, and they do this at all drama schools, is they don't just analyze your acting, they analyze you as a person. So they're always giving sort of comments about, and the one I used to get over and over again was that I use humor as a defense mechanism and humor to deflect. This is meant to be a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. But I think sometimes they wanted me to just be sad. They were like, no, just be sad.
Was this like in every role? You'd like, whatever it was, no matter what the play, you'd like find a way to put a joke into it. You're doing some Ibsen.
No, so this is what was unfair about it, is they didn't mind in acting. They were like, great, you know, I could do sad acting. I could do all the actings. It was, they were talking about me as a person. So it's a weird thing at drama school. They don't just say, look at your acting. They go, you need to understand yourself to be a good actor. So we're going to tell you what's wrong with you. And also, you walk funny. They do that with other people. Let's walk around the room. You walk funny.
Did you know that was going to happen when you went to drama school?
No, I thought it'd be all about the acting, but it's surprisingly about you and what's wrong with you.
Was that defense mechanism in order to stop this kind of invasion of privacy that you weren't expecting?
I think it's a mixed things. I've always, like, even when I've had really, really horrible things happen to me, I think I've always, the way my mind works is I'm always trying to look for the humour in it, even if it's really dark humour. So I think there's that. But I also think there is a thing of, I don't want to make people uncomfortable. So if I'm talking about something sad or horrible that's happened to me, I'll usually throw in some funny line so that they're not looking all serious and sad at me.
Yeah, so, I understand, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's what they were getting at drama school. They were like, stop doing that. Just tell us your sad story. We just want to hear the tragedy. Don't make a funny line out of it.
Do they really sit you down and like make you share quite upsetting moments from your lives?
No, but you'd have the odd exercise where, you know, you had to tell a story from your past, or one thing that was really funny we had to do was we had to reenact arguments with sort of family members or friends, and it didn't have to be an argument that actually happened, but an argument that was likely to happen. But I sort of said, well, I don't really argue with my family. So I made one up. And then the teacher was like, I did one with my aunt. And she afterwards was like, your poor aunt. How does she cope with you? And I was like, I make that up. I've never argued with my aunt. So I came up with one.
What was the argument about? Can you remember?
I've got a big family and I've got two aunts in London and they've both put me up at various times. And so in the scenario, I'd made up that my aunt had told me that I had to leave and said, you know, we don't want you living here anymore.
Ouch.
And yeah. And I was like, how can you do this? What about family? And then she was like, your poor aunt, she put a roof over your head and then you manipulate her. This never happened. I lived there. It was fine. I left.
Are they kind of naive, these teachers? Are they not very worldly?
I just think drama teachers are very strange.
Were there people, you know, in your class, in your year,
yeah,
who got quite affected by their having their personality critiqued and sort of being told to change?
Definitely. I think I was lucky in that when I went to drama school, I was a little bit older, so I was 21. And I think people who came straight out of school, I think it was really hard on them, actually, because, you know, at 18, you're much more sort of eager to please and you're trying to take on everyone's criticism. And all the teachers would give you criticism that conflicted with other teachers. And yeah, I think for the younger people in our year, I think it was hard work.
Do you think, and do any of your friends, you know, who went there, is there the feeling that actually changing your personality and who you are on the advice of drama teachers makes you a better performer? Or is that just a load of old hogwash?
Yeah, I think, do you know what? I think some people had a kind of angry backlash after they left drama school where they were like, why did I follow what they were saying? I know nothing about me. So I think there was a bit of that going on.
So we've got the opening scene and it's you with the drama teacher not taking the piss, but being told you are taking the piss. By the way, is that not one of the great kind of reports to receive off a teacher ever? Like, I just, and you're an adult, you're a grown adult being told that as well. What did your parents, what did your family say when that was actually, before we move on, what did your family say when you told them that story? Did they go, yeah, see that? Absolutely, yeah.
It's funny, I don't know if I ever did tell my family that. I mean, my family all come across like they're taking the piss. They probably...
Very healthy. Very healthy.
Very healthy.
So given there's a very specific requirement to the role of Rosie Holt, which would appear to be taking the piss, even if you're not taking the piss, or accidentally taking the piss when you're not taking the piss, who would be cast in the lead?
Okay, Rosie? Hear me out. What about Angelina Jolie?
What about Angelina Jolie? Are you taking the piss?
Yes, but also, no. Yeah. No, I'm also serious. I like the idea of Angelina Jolie playing someone completely unlike Angelina Jolie. I just also like the idea of, I was thinking, who do I want to play me? And then I thought, how funny if it was just Angelina Jolie, who only plays these really strong, badass, never embarrassed people who looks incredible. And I thought, yeah, that's my shit weasel.
Angelina Jolie is shit weasel.
Shit weasel. I mean, she played, didn't she play a black woman, which got lots of hate in A Mighty Heart? Was it A Mighty Heart where she played a mixed race woman? And people were quite rightly a bit like, oh, hang on. So she can play a mixed race woman. She can play shit weasel.
Why do you say that she's nothing like you?
Well, because she's the kind of, she's just like strong and glamorous and cool. No nonsense. And looks like she could shoot everybody if she wanted.
Rosie, are you saying there are times in your life you wish you could just shoot people?
Just shoot everyone. That's when the film takes a darker turn and loses some audience members along the way.
It's a strong choice. It's a strong choice.
Okay, Angelina Jolie or Molly Shannon.
Oh, wow. Now that is a great call.
Yeah.
That's a great call. Molly Shannon, recently in The White Lotus.
Yes. She's so good.
Which is one of the best pieces of television this year.
Yeah.
Sensational piece of TV. She's a bit older than you.
She's a bit older than me.
Bit older than me. I like the idea of reverse age casting, though. That doesn't happen
Why
very
not?
Often.
Yeah, let's do it.
Why Molly Shannon?
She's great. She's funny. She can do all the right. She can do everything, can't she? She sort of can do vulnerable, but then she's very funny and she's silly. And then sometimes she's kind of manic and mad. I think she's great.
I also think that there is a certain aspect of her which is like taking the piss, but maybe not taking the piss.
Yeah.
There are times when she's kind of unreadable.
Yes,
particularly completely. In The White Lotus, where she plays the mother of it, like she's like a very rich waspy mum to this insufferable man child, yeah, and they're very wealthy, and she says really kind of abrupt things to her daughter-in-law. They've just got married. She says really abrupt things to her, and you can't quite tell if she's serious and not.
Yeah, serious. I really liked that performance as well because she's sort of. Sometimes she seems sort of very sort of silly and amiable, but actually you can tell very quickly she's not a nice person at all.
Yes.
And yes. I thought that was done really well.
Yeah.
You go, oh, she's kind of awful.
Now, this brings us back to what you were mentioning a minute ago, Rosie. It's using humour to deflect the true nature of what the character, I should say, not Molly Shannon.
Yeah.
The true nature of what the character says is kind of deflected with humour because she wants to say terrible things but sort of wraps it up in a, the way that she speaks. Intriguing casting. Intriguing casting. I almost thought what you're going to suggest there, potentially having two women play you, one who's quite serious and one who isn't taking
like the Bob Dylan I'm Not There, where there's different actors doing it. Yeah, let's do that. I like that idea. Let's do it. Why not? Throw it in. Let's have them both do it.
Jolie and Shannon.
Yeah. And then also we'll have a third one, which will be some teeny bopper TikTok star. She can play me as well. I don't know any of their names. Oh, wait. No, what about the one who starred in, which I'm sure you watched, Toby, He's All That on Netflix recently?
It's on the list, Rosie. And I'm not saying where on the list, but it's on the list.
I watched that recently. Thought, yeah, okay, she can play me as well. There we go. Three of them. They can all audition and we'll see which one does it best.
Would you audition them via the medium of TikTok? Audition Angelina via TikTok?
I don't even understand TikTok. I was talking to a friend and they went, no, you've got to keep watching them until it starts suggesting ones you like and then you start seeing ones you like. And I thought, that sounds, what an exhausting concept that I have to go through all these family members doing synchronized dancing.
That is one of the worst trends of the last 2 or 3 years.
Especially because some of them were really bad. They weren't complicated dances. Like there were some inventive ones, but there were most of them, there were that one that was like, me, me, me. That one, so annoying.
I mean, maybe we'll release this as a video. I don't know. Maybe to trail the episode. But that was for anyone listening. Rosie really nailed that there, and
Thank you.
Head spin at the end. It was out of nowhere. Out of nowhere.
I did learn dancing at drama school. Thank you. Yeah.
Don't like to talk about it.
But just whip it out sometimes in podcasts when no one can see it.
So we've got Angelina Jolie, Molly Shannon, and a TikTok star. I'm thinking, now we're going to come to the genre. I'm thinking it feels kind of an unusual genre, an unusual film. Maybe can't be pigeonholed, but is there a genre you want the film to be? And what sort of budget are we looking at?
So I think like a tragicomedy, but with songs.
Right.
Like musical, I want music numbers.
A musical comedy? A musical tragedy.
Exactly, tragedy.
I mean, again, an opportunity to get the moves in. Don't like to talk about it, but why musical? Why musical comedy tragedy?
Okay, I mean, I have to be honest with you. My singing, I can sing, but it's fine. You know, it's fine. Like, it's not good, but it's fine. But I love a bit of musicals. And I like things like, you know, I know La La Land ended up getting kind of, there was a backlash to it, but I sort of like that whole thing of just throwing in songs there. It's great.
Yes.
You know, sometimes in musicals, something happens that's not really, like if it just happened in a normal film, you go, okay, I don't care. But because they're like, I've lost my shoe. Now it makes me think of the times I lost my mind. You know, I like the fact that you can just highlight some issue that nothing much happens, but you can turn it into song.
Do you do that in real life? Do you ever just start singing in real life?
No, but maybe I should start. Maybe I should see what happens. Just trust in the music.
Trust in the music.
Did you see for the Buffy episode Once More with Feeling? The best Buffy episode ever.
Yes, I'm aware of, yes.
You say aware of, you clearly haven't seen it.
Okay, Buffy confession time. I think I fell out of viewing it round about series 6.
What? Series 6 is when Once More with Feeling is.
I think I might have seen it, but I can't remember because this I definitely did. I definitely haven't finished.
You're
watching
fired
Buffy.
From the advisory board of a movie.
So I think I've seen it, but that was a huge episode. It was also, I don't know, I can't think of another show where they'd done that before, where suddenly the whole episode was a musical episode. And that then started a horrendous trend in American television where every series started doing that. But when you watch that Once More thing for the first time, as a drama student, as a performer, a writer, an actor, what did that mean to you to see something like that?
Oh, I love Buffy. That episode was great. And also what was great about it was that a lot of them, you know, weren't really singers. So it was kind of great. There was something charming about it that they were just all bursting into song and weren't necessarily the best.
And it all reminds me, one of my favourite vocal performances of all time, Pierce Brosnan in Mamma Mia, when he sings SOS. Yeah. I'm captivated. Whenever I see it, I'm absolutely, when you're down. Yeah. James Bond singing SOS, it's just... there's something about it. I can't look away whenever I see it.
I love Pierce Brosnan as well. He's so great and he's so fit. He's so old, but he's so fit. Like he's 75 or something, 73?
70.
He's beautiful.
Is he going to be in the film?
Yeah, he's going to be who I end up with.
I cannot. But he's 68.
Is he 68?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was in his 70s, but still, he's not far off. He's so good looking.
So with him on board and all these other stars, in Shit Weasel, which parts of your life would definitely have to be in there and why?
Oh, God. What parts would be in there? Oh, my life. Awful. Well, I actually think that on the whole, if we were going to look at them quite boring, actually, so I've done a lot of horrible jobs and a lot of temping, which on the face of it is quite boring, but there were certain moments in those jobs of kind of glorious humiliation that I think should be put on screen. When you're a temp, people are so awful to you. And also, oh God, an abductive waitressing. I was an estate agent for a bit. Actually, Toby, someone found that out on someone Googled who hated me, Googled me and found out that I'd done a bit of estate agent. And they went, Rosie Holt is actually a right-wing person because she used to be an estate agent.
Someone went up, what? Someone tracked down your history?
Yeah, it was mental. There's certain people on the far left and Twitter who think I'm awful. And I think he was trying to prove that I was actually a right-wing puppet. And this was like going, look, when you were an estate agent. I was like, oh, he's got hold of my estate agent past.
How long were you an estate agent for?
A year. Not very long. Okay. That wasn't very good at it.
What, did you sell many properties?
No, I was terrible at it. It was actually really nice estate agents. It was like a little boutique estate agency and they were really nice and they kind of prided themselves on being the good guys and they were lovely.
What's your patter like? What was your sales patter like when you were showing people around the house?
Absolutely appalling. How do you like, so this is really, what do you think? Yeah, cool. Oh, yeah, it's really nice. And then they'd ask questions about the house and I'd go, I'm not sure. Didn't have a clue. I'm now really worried that the estate agency are listening. I don't want to besmirch their name. They were great and I was fine.
Have you ever watched Statlett's Flats?
I love Statlett's Flats. I think it's so good.
Does that hit home quite a bit?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. We were a bit more upmarket than Stafford's flats, but it's so, that program is genius. It's so good.
Before we go into some of those jobs you mentioned, and your reaction, your visceral physical reaction to even saying them out loud, might I just point out that Glorious Humiliation is a fantastic name for a film also. that is,
and that would be better than Shitweasel.
No, I really like Shitweasel, but Glorious Humiliation is a great, is not only a great phrase, it's also a great name for a film. When he kind of went waitressing and you had to clear your throat after saying that, what happened waitressing that sticks with you?
So I was I used to waitress at the BFI, which was a terrible, in retrospect, was a terrible place to waitress, because it's, there's something very humiliating about, and I just got out of Lambda, so I was feeling very low, and you'd be serving people that you'd met while you were at Lambda, and you were like, hey, I'm at Lambda Drama School and I'm going to be famous, and then the next time you're kind of serving them food. And then also the worst case was, there was this girl who she sort of worked in theatre, and I'd met her while I was at Lambda and we chatted, and then when I left drama school, I sent her an email sort of saying, oh, hey, I heard you were casting this and it'd be great to be seen for it. And she never replied, fine. But then I bumped into her on the tube and I said, oh, hey. And I, all the way through, I was thinking, do I mention it? Do I mention that I sent her this email? And I thought, no, that's just embarrassing. And then towards the end, she sort of said, oh, so I'm doing this show. So I thought I might as well mention it. So I said, oh, yeah, no, I sent you an email about that, actually. And she went, yeah, I got it. And there was just a silence, and it was awful. Anyway, so I next saw her 2 weeks later. She came into this restaurant I was working at, and I was like, oh, God, not the excruciating director I had a chat with on the train. And she sat there and she ordered a tea. She was on the phone, and luckily another waiter was dealing with her. So I was sort of going around sort of cleaning the tables around her and sort of kind of not nodding in her direction. And she'd sort of like look at me a bit strangely. And then he went on his lunch break. So he said, Rosie, can you take over table number four? And I was like, oh, not table number four. So I came there with this coffee and I put the coffee down in front of her and I sort of nodded at her and she sort of looked at me while she was on the phone. And then she spilt the coffee and she said to me, I was cleaning up and she went, excuse me, can I have a, and just pointed at the mess. And I went, cloth? And she went, yeah. So I went off and I was thinking, she can't recognize me. There's no way she would just sort of say, excuse me. And so I went off and I got this cloth and I came back and I started like mopping up her table. She just sort of sat and looked at me doing it. And then I went, so how are things going with your show? And she went, yeah, great, Rosie, quite busy. And I thought, that's the bitch, she knows who I am. She's just watching me like clear up after her coffee. And then I was in such a sort of mentally in a kind of low position. I went, so I'm doing a little fringe show around the corner, if you ever. And then she went, well, you've got my email.
Oh, no, she didn't say that.
She did. It was awful. It was awful. That was, I think, that's the low point of my waitressing time at BFI.
Man.
Yeah.
Did you ever speak to her again about anything? Or
I actually saw her 2 years ago at some premiere that I'd like, gone with my then boyfriend, and she was there. And she was more friendly to me then, but I think that was because my boyfriend was successful. She probably didn't even remember who I was, but I was like, that's the girl. She was awful when I was a waitress.
That's I don't want to say spiteful, but it feels pointed.
Yeah, it's all about the power.
So would you recommend to any drama students they don't work at the BFI cafe if they're
I think just don't work at any thing which sort of combines theatre, in my opinion. Like if you're working as an usher or anything where you're going to see theatre people, it's actually disheartening, because it's not like someone is going to go, hey, I like the way you waitress, I'm doing this little film at the moment and I think you'd be great for it. That never happens. And that I know one person that happened to, but it's just where she was working a bar at a theatre, but she was also, that was when she was quite young. And, you know, I think if you're in your 20s and you're working there, you don't want people to see you do that.
But the problem is, if that happened to your mate, it means it does happen.
It does happen.
That kind of fantasy does, however slim.
Yeah, but I think it's so I really think she's a sort of one in a million case.
Did you take the job there because you kind of wanted to be close to the industry in that way? Like you were, you think it kind of still felt like you were part of the industry even though you just left drama school?
I think that was the appeal. I mean, I got offered the job because I got poached because I was waitressing somewhere else. And the guy who worked at the BFI theatre was like, hey, you're great and Zane, why don't you come and work at the BFI? And I thought, actually, that's great because I'll be, what's the word? I wanted to say shaking shoulders with, that's not the phrase, shaking shoulders with the famous.
I mean, they rub shoulders.
That's the one I was looking for. No one shakes their shoulders.
So what parts of your life would be on the cutting room floor then? Which parts wouldn't be going in?
Probably me tweeting. It's quite boring, isn't it? Apart from maybe when I've been subject to two big pylons, maybe that could be in there as sort of interpretive dance.
A pylon as interpretive dance?
Yeah.
Wow.
People going, oh, you're shit. And then just sort of like zinging off.
What, but, like kind of real rainbow rhythms, sort of like hippie kind of movements, fluid
we
stuff.
We hate you. Yeah.
What were the pylons?
Oh, they were awful. So the first one was, it was a good learning curve. Usually when I post, you know, I either post my videos or I post very tongue-in-cheek stuff about politics. And I made the mistake of going on Twitter late at night and I'd been watching the news and I was irritated and I sort of sent off quite a serious tweet that also wasn't terribly well thought out. It was after the Kill the Bill protests, which, you know, everyone was rightly protesting. But then there was in Bristol, a sort of portion of the protest got out of control and they set police cars on fire. And I went on Twitter and there were lots of people on the left going, yeah, this is good and right. And then there were these reports that these policemen had sort of been attacked and they were like, yeah, this is great. And I thought, oh, come on, this isn't good. So I sort of sent a tweet saying, how do you justify breaking bones of policemen? That's not right. It was something like that, which I thought was fairly inoffensive, but the people got very angry and they called me a bootlicker, an authoritarian and a right winger.
Right.
And that went mad for a couple of days and then it kind of calmed down. But then the police admitted that they'd exaggerated the injuries. So then I had Owen Jones, who's got like a million followers, replied to my now 4-day-old tweet, sort of saying, you know, Rosie, this is misinformation. So I suddenly had all his million followers going for me. And I handled it very badly. So I sort of doubled down, which is, in retrospect, is not what you should do. So because people were writing underneath all my tweets things like, oh, you're an arrogant monster, just like your character and all these things. And then tagging me in videos of police violence going, do you like this, Rosie Hawk? Do you love police violence so much? And then they were writing under other tweets going, will you retract what you said? And so I responded to one going, no, bye. And then people were screenshotting it. And people were screenshotting it and then sharing the screenshot going, look how awful Rosie Holt is. Look, she's refusing to back down. And it was just horrible. It was so intense. It was just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments. And then things like, I knew I never liked Rosie Holt. And you're just going, oh, this shouldn't get to me, but it does. So that was a bit mad. And then the second parlor was because of a sketch I did, which was very dark, which was Love Island contestant gets sent to Priti Patel's offshore refugee camp by mistake. So it was always playing with a line. You know, I put it up and I'd push people going, this is great. And then I had some people going, this, you shouldn't joke about the stuff and you're making fun of refugees and gay people, which I wasn't doing. But that also got a bit nasty. And that one I dealt with better. I didn't respond to it. I think I responded to one saying, no, look, this is not what I'm doing. And I'm trying to do this and this and this. And then someone just responded going, no, you're a racist. And I thought, okay, that's all I'm going to reply to. But yeah, that was quite intense because it was some people who I knew off the comedy scene who were writing I was a bigot. And that was kind of hurtful.
Wow.
That kind of was worse in a way because it was sort of more, felt more personal.
How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that sudden and often aggressive attention? because your phone must have just been lit up like backwards illuminations.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was really horrible. I mean, I was out with a friend and I sort of said to her, I said, oh God, I think I'm getting cancelled because I looked on my phone and there was some obscure fan that had been big in the 90s tweeting that I was a bigot and awful and I should take down the sketch. And that was not good. I think, you know, because I always get abuse. I think, you know, anyone does who's got a kind of profile online, and I get abuse every week. But I think the thing is with a pile on is it's so, there's so much of it. You can't just sort of scroll past because you're just getting... you know, comment after comment after comment, and it does, yeah, psychologically I found it quite upsetting. But I think it also, you know, I also kind of was clear, I knew what I was trying to do with that sketch, so I didn't sort of take it, I thought about taking it down, and then I thought, no, I'm not going to take it down because I know what I'm doing with it, and there are lots of people who do know what I'm doing with it, and you know, I'm gonna stand by my art.
Did that ever give you cause to reconsider, like, when you are making these videos, what may be perceived to be crossing the line?
Yes and no. I think it's always a slight worry. It's why when I know a lot of comics go, oh, there's no such thing as cancel culture. And I know what they mean, because I think the problem is that a lot of the right hold up something as cancel culture. And you go, that's not cancel culture, is it? Like, J.K. Rowling is, she's doing all right, you know. But I do think there is... it can be quite scary sometimes, because you are, you put something out and, you know, and a load of people assume your intentions are bad. And that's that, I think that's quite hard. Yep. But that said, no, I try and just put out things that I think are funny and not worry about, you know, maybe when I'm about to post it, I might go, oh, this is going to go down really badly, but I'll still do it. I'll still post it.
It's funny that you mentioned about doubling down. It's interesting, isn't it? Because that's something right-wingers do a lot.
Yeah. Do you know what was funny is I did realise the mentality behind it, because you feel, you know, because when I posted that tweet, it was funny. My ex got into contact with me, and he's very left, and he sort of said, Rosie, this is a bad tweet. You should take this down. And you kind of go, okay. You know, we talked about it. And I was like, I see where you're coming from. But, you know, I'm just against violence or whatever. But I think the thing is, when, regardless of how you feel about something you've done, if you've got loads of people telling you, you must retract, you must apologize, your gut reaction is to go, oh, fuck you, you know, fuck you, I'm not doing that, you can't make me. So, I mean, when it was happening, that was kind of, you know, because people were trying to sort of say, this is why you're a terrible person and you must repent. It did make me feel very defensive and very cross. And it did make me realize how, if you're, you know, these right wingers that we see who kind of double down, how they get into that pattern, because I think it's quite a human reaction. It's a human, you don't want to go, oh, you're right, I'm so sorry. And please keep battering me with your words of hate, with a few exceptions. I think most of us kind of go, no, it's not fair. Yeah, that wasn't very eloquent, but yeah.
No. But then, because obviously that then engenders more conflict, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's why it was a good learning curve. Because as I said, with the Love Island sketch, I just kept shtum. I didn't, apart from saying to one person, no, look, this is what I was trying to do, I just didn't reply. But yeah, the first one I handled so badly, because I just replied to people and I go, look, this is what I was trying to do. And they go, no, you're a right-wing student. You're a bootlicker. And I go, I'm not a bootlicker. You're just stupid. And it doesn't help anyone. And people muting, keep the receipts. So
yeah, but muting is also very useful.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Muting is very useful, which hopefully people won't have the film on mute throughout. That would be...
Especially they'll miss the songs.
Yeah, exactly. But the interpretive pylon dance, however, I mean, who needs... You don't even need words or music for that. It's the fluidity of it all is so hypnotic.
Yeah, it'll be like, you know, Anne Hathaway in Les Miserables, where she's singing and there's all these prostitutes coming and being like, we're taking your hair and we're taking your teeth. And it's all very frenetic and it'll be like that.
What a parallel to draw with being with an interpretive pylon dance, Les Miserables. Wow.
Yeah, I when I look at what I endure on Twitter, I go, yes, this is just like a poor starving woman in France who's forced to sell her hair and teeth and become a prostitute.
So we meant Les Miserables is there, right, as an influence. But yeah. What are the other influences on this film, from TV or film or literature or theatre or comics? Is there anything else
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, sync once more with feeling. Obvious Child, have you seen that film?
Obvious Child.
It's called Obvious Child. It's really good comedy, but again, it's a sort of low-key comedy about this girl getting an abortion. And it's actually with the man in it is Jake Lacy, who played the obnoxious guy in The White Lotus.
Ah, yes.
If you haven't seen it, it's great because it's really, it sort of doesn't treat an abortion as a sort of like, it's just a sort of, you know, she's getting an abortion, but it's very funny and she's a stand-up and it's kind of sweet and funny and clever. I like the whole tone of that movie. Yeah.
That's on the list. And I'm going to be honest with you, not only is that on the list, that's going above He's All That as well.
Well, I don't want to question your choices, but He's All That should be at the forefront of your list.
I'll work on it. I'll do some whittling. I'll do some whittling. Now, if the critics love or hate Shit Weasel,
yeah,
how'd that affect you and your next project?
Well, so if they hate it, I mean, as established, I'll probably double down and be like, fuck you, your views are a pile of shit. This is absolutely amazing.
That is one reaction, yes. That is definitely one reaction.
All my films are masterpieces. That's what I do.
Not enough people do that. Yeah, I really...
Or
so
theater,
what, I mean,
Theatre of Blood. Have you seen Theatre of Blood?
Oh, the Vince, classic Vincent Price.
Yeah, where he starts killing off all the critics who are rude about his Shakespeare production.
Okay, that's one... that is a strong reaction. Giving a quote to a newspaper, that's one reaction. Murdering your critics, another. Are you good with criticism from critics or from the audiences?
Yes, I think I am, actually. I think I am quite good with criticism. And that I tend to be equally, big myself up, but I think I'm on the whole, apart from when I'm doubling down on Twitter, I'm quite good at listening to it, but also shaking off what I need to. So I'd say on the whole, I don't like it. I don't like criticism. Let's not go overboard. You know, I prefer not to have any, but I think I'm reasonably good at dealing with it.
Do you read your reviews?
I try not to, but the problem is sometimes, especially with Edinburgh Fringe, if you don't have a PR, you're having to, because you're having to pick out the good quotes and then you kind of have to. I think if I was in a situation where I didn't have to, I wouldn't read them. But certainly, I mean, it was lovely because when we did The Crown Jewel, that got very good reviews. So that was nice.
Have you ever had a critique where you've actually taken something from it and what you've done next has actually... you think better or is improved? Or
certainly on a smaller scale. I mean, not from professional critics, but certainly, you know, we've all got those friends who are quite good at going, no, this isn't great, this isn't great. And I've always find that quite invigorating. So I think when I say I take criticism well from certain people. I think from criticism in papers, you're like, no, fuck you, I'm coming to kill your dogs. Just what happens in Theatre of Blood.
So Shit Weasel is in the can. It's coming to the cinema. It's the premiere. Where's the premiere taking place and who's invited?
Okay, maybe I'll have the premiere at the BFI for old time's sake.
Are you just knocking coffees over left, right and centre just to show, just to wield your power?
Yeah. No, I'd be really nice and patronising to everyone who worked there and go, guys, I was just like you. No, I wouldn't.
At the BFI, the one on the South Bank.
Yes.
BFI 1. I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Is it because of that kind of link, that narrative loop?
The narrative loop. I think also, I like the BFI. I like what the BFI do. And I think the problem with it is ever since I've worked there, it's been slightly tainted for me. So I'd quite like to reclaim my love of the BFI and go, oh, this is a great place. And it's no longer just the place that I used to waitress at and break plates at a lot.
How many plates?
Oh, so many, so many. They had to work into the staff briefing every day because they were like, Rosie, you need to stop breaking plates. And I was so embarrassed about how many plates I was breaking, I started hiding them under the sofa. Because it was too many.
Do you not have a good grip? Were they oily? Were they full of ketchup? What was going on? Like, what's...
I'm just very clumsy and get distracted and they would fall. Literally every day, I would break plates every day. It was very embarrassing. I think they kept me on because I was otherwise a very good waitress, but a waitress who broke things a lot.
Who's invited, Rosie? Who's coming to a Shit Weasel premiere at the BFI?
Oh, I'd like everyone to come. I like a big party. like lots of everyone I know and like. And I like most people. And I've got a very big family. So I'm one of five. And I've got 21st cousins and lots of uncles and aunts. So they all have to come. And
you need the BFI one just to fit them all in. But who isn't invited, Rosie? Who's not invited?
All the men who never wronged me. They can't come. And also the nameless director / casting, she can't come. And the comedians who joined in the parlon for me in my Love Island sketch, they're also not invited.
Were these comedians that you were friends with previously?
No, I wasn't friends with them, but I knew them and we've always been nice to each other. So, but actually I don't mind. They can come if they want.
If only for the pleasure of turning them away, I'm assuming.
Be like, no, sorry, you're not invited. No. I just kill them with kindness. I'd say, you look at my film and look at this bit where you're represented in interpretive dance. Don't you feel bad? It'd be like my mum is a writer and she in her novels, she felt like a friend had done something mean to her. She'd put it, they'd go in her books, but she'd forget to change the names or she'd change the names only slightly. And she'd get in so much trouble with friends.
That happened more than once as well.
Yeah, it happened more than once.
Wow.
And she was like, I don't know how I did that. And I think she didn't. I think she meant to change the names and then forgot. Or she would change the names, but it would be just something like Jim would become John. You know, it was really slight.
And were the reasons they were included all quite petty or were there any kind of major fallouts?
No, they were fairly petty. They were sort of like...
That's even better. It's over something really petty. That's so good. Oh, yeah, he took the last cupcake.
Exactly. Going in the book. He's going in the book.
Your family's friends, your mother's friends, your parents' friends, they must have to really tread around her lightly just in case.
Well, my mum's funny because she's sort of sweet and easygoing, but she does have a black book. And if you go in it, you don't go out. So I think there's only certain things. So you're kind of fine most of the time, but you cross a certain line.
Wow.
You're in the black book.
Well, Rosie Holt, congratulations on Shit Weasel, starring Angelina Jolie, Molly Shannon, a TikToker from He's All That, and an ancient Pierce Brosnan, featuring scammed money, glorious humiliation, the life of an estate agent, taking the piss, and plate smashing. Rosie Holt, congratulations on being greenlit.
Yay, thank you very much.